This is the Overtime Podcast Network.
This is the Turn on the Jets podcast.
With the third pick in the 2019 NFL Draft, the New York Jets select Quinnen Williams, nose tackle, Alabama.
Now, here's your host, Joe Caparoso.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Turn on the Jets podcast. I'm your host, Joe Caparoso, owner of TurnOnTheJets.com. Today we're going to talk with Joe Blewett, who is our resident film expert. He's recently cranked through an entire breakdown of Sam Darnold's rookie year. Also looked at Robbie Anderson, Leonard Williams, Jordan Jenkins, and Jonathan Harrison. We're going to mostly focus on Darnold for the first half of our conversation and then round it out by talking about those other five guys. As a reminder, subscribe, rate, review to this podcast on iTunes. It's also available on Spotify and Google Play. And we publish episodes on TurnOnTheJets.com, where you can find a nice, healthy collection of audio and written content. Give Joe a follow on Twitter at JoeRB31. Give me a follow on Twitter at JCaparoso. Check out the gear store at The Loyalist, which we always are tweeting out or posting on Facebook about. And I think that basically covers it. This is going to run on Thursday, and then we'll be back with our regular episode once per week until we get into training camp, and we'll probably go to two and maybe three per week. Only a few weeks away. We're just about there. So, Joe, thank you as always for taking the time for joining us. How you been doing?
Busy, man. It's the summer, so for my job, when everybody else is having fun in the summer, that means more work for me, but a little bit busy with the film reviews as well, but other than that, with sports, it's been pretty good, to be completely honest. With the Jets are looking up, regardless of everything that happened in the offseason with Mike McCagden, the Devils got Subban and Jack Hughes, the my Nets, not my Nets of new, my Nets of old, with Kerry Kittle as a fan back then, just got KD and Kyrie. So everything's going pretty well right now on my sports team, so I'm pretty happy.
Hey, a positive offseason across the board. Not for my Knicks, but listen, that's a whole separate conversation.
Hey, man, Julius Randle and KD are on the same level. It's all good. Don't worry about it.
I'm excited about Julius, not excited about much else right now. But we'll take what we can get, and you know, we'll find a way to maintain positivity, and we'll compete in 2025 or something like that. With Sam Darnold's rookie year, I think The conventional wisdom, which I think is accurate, is that, you know, he was up and down, you know, the first portion of the year, misses three games due to injury. How serious that injury was, I think, will be something that we never really know, if he actually could have came back or they just kind of wanted to put him on ice for a few weeks. Comes back, finishes the season particularly strong, mostly during a three-game stretch against Buffalo, where actually he had left with an injury and then came back and played well in the second half. And then had really big games against both Houston and Green Bay before, you know, a tough finale for everyone against New England, where he really, not that he ever had any help, but particularly had no help in that game. So you look at Darnold's numbers, they don't jump off the page. You know, he did finish with more touchdowns and interceptions. He had a couple big games, a couple really ugly games that throw the stats a little bit, namely his game in Miami, where he threw four interceptions and also, you know, had some interceptions concentrated late in the Minnesota game and the Jacksonville game, or actually Jacksonville game early in the season. But a bit up and down. Most Jet fans act like, or carry themselves like, it is a foregone conclusion he's going to be a superstar and he is definitely a franchise quarterback. Your Browns, Bills, Dolphins, Patriot fans would say that's putting the cart in front of the horse and that, you know, he's a bust or he looked really rough as a rookie. As with most things, I tend to think the truth is somewhere in the middle, but more skewing towards the size that Jet fans have plenty to be excited about and reason to be extremely optimistic that he could be this team's starting quarterback at a high level for the next decade or so. When you look at Darnold's rookie season in totality, comparing it to what you expected with him coming in, what is sort of your short synopsis of how he played and why Jet fans should both be excited but also maybe not act like he's fully a foregone conclusion to be a superstar at this point?
Yeah, it was pretty much what I expected. Any 21 year old quarterback, no matter who it is, going to come in and struggle in some games. It's not like Darnold had the most help around him, or you're saying that he didn't have talent around him. I think he played the top 10 minute average in DVOA against defenses this year. Where we saw him play in games you know, like the Chicago Bears or like the Vikings, where his receivers were guys like, you know, Deontay Burnett, who is going to hopefully develop into a nice fifth or sixth string wide receiver for the Jets, as one of his main targets, along with Jermaine Kearse, Sherrone Peak, who literally in the Vikings game got hit in the chest on a slant route and just the ball popped up and got intercepted by Trey Waynes. So along with some bad receivers that he had in some of these games because of injuries, he had a terrible offensive line in terms of run blocking. He was consistently behind the chains. And if the offensive line did block well on the first or second down run, it was usually a holding call or some kind of penalty against the Jets that would set them back. So he didn't have a lot of talent to work with on the field. And with that, he also had an offensive coordinator in Jeremy Bates, who was not innovative at all and didn't really get guys open. There's nothing really impressive that I saw from him, minus a play or two, which is going to happen with any offensive coordinator. So the talent all around him was really not helping at all. And you even look at the running backs. You had Crowell go down somewhere in the midseason. You had Powell go down against the Vikings, and now he was working with receivers who, you know, are sixth string on our roster right now, or not even on the roster, and running backs who are, you know, McGuire and Cannon, who are going to be fighting for that fourth spot right now. So he was really not working with a lot. He struggled in certain games. The Lions game, you know, obviously the first play was blown up from the start, where he had some pressure. He was rolling out to the right. He had to step up an extra second, got intercepted. That was really bad for any Jets fan. I'm sure about a lot of big Jets fans. I got a bunch of texts. So there was some plays that he definitely struggled in, some games that he struggled in. But then also in those games, there were super impressive plays in terms of moving around the pocket, pocket awareness, throwing on the run, making throws that a lot of quarterbacks just can't make. Specifically in those last four games, that's why people are really, really, high on him going into next season with some of those throws he makes, some of the plays he made without a ton of talent around him. But to be short, yeah, you don't want to, automatically assume he's going to be a top 5 to 10 quarterback going into next year. But if he does continue to play like he did in those last four games last year, then I think that the expectation should be top, hopefully he could string together consistent games and hopefully be top 15, getting into that top 10. But you still have to understand that he's not going to be a finished product at 22 years old. He still have to develop chemistry with both Gase and some of the new offensive weapons he has. So I think he's going to have some down games, but hopefully the down games are very few and far between, between a couple of consistent games that he's showing out like he did against the Packers and the Texans, where he was just on fire.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
This is the Overtime Podcast Network.
I tend to feel like with Darnold's style of play that he is always going to be a guy where there's going to be an opportunity there for him to have turnovers. He's never going to be one of these extremely clean quarterbacks who's going to have a season where he has like 3 to 6 total turnovers. He is someone who, when plays break down, he plays aggressive and isn't shy about attacking and taking chances. That's going to lead to big plays. It's also going to lead to mistakes. It just feels that his game is a little more improvisational than some other quarterbacks are, which could be a good and a bad thing. And I'd rather have a quarterback who is generally going to play a little more aggressive and take more chances rather than be, hyper-conservative like we've seen from a guy like Derek Carr, where he's going to have a 70 completion percentage, but his yards per attempt is, 5 or 6 in some games because he's checking down and checking down. With Darnold and with how he plays, should Jet fans accept the reality that, look, there's going to be some weeks and some plays where he takes some chances that are going to result in turnovers, but that by the same style of play, he's going to create some big plays and also be a player when things get off script or the play breaks down. The Jets will have a chance to make something out of nothing, where it's not just going to be a situation where, all right, his first read's not there, his second read's not there, he's got to dirt it or take a sack or whatever. He may be able to make something out of nothing. Is that just the nature of what his game is? And to a certain extent, certain, you know, players don't change to an extent. So is that just what he is going to be?
Yeah, that's, and you said that perfectly. It's funny. I just did the show yesterday on YouTube, and I said literally the same exact thing, where I was saying he's never going to be a quarterback, or I don't think he's going to be a quarterback who has a really low interception rate, where it's whatever a low one is. So it's 4, 5, 6, 7. I think he'll probably always be around, you know, that 10 range, just because of what you said. He makes a lot of improv type plays because the offensive line was one bad, and you saw it a lot last year. Just look at the Texans game. There was one play where he rolls out to the right, avoids J.J. Watt, pump fakes another defender who's biting down the box on him, you know, slips past him, and then J.J. Watt catches back up from behind him. He's literally getting tackled by J.J. Watt while he finds Robbie Anderson over the middle with the defender literally in his hip pocket. It hits Robbie Anderson in the hands, but he dropped it. So, like, there's some plays where you're watching, like, oh, don't throw it, and then it gets completely like, oh, yeah, that was a good throw, you know? So it's like, he makes some crazy plays there's going to be some interceptions because he's super aggressive. And it was funny, I was arguing with some Bills fans because, you know, as I'm putting up, you know, plays, there's Jets fans commenting, oh, you know, Josh Allen can't do that. I'm fighting with Bills fans. Yeah, he's a safe quarterback who takes the checkdowns a lot. And I, you know, obviously commented back some plays, but he's definitely he has that gunslinger type mentality at times where he forces some balls into some really, really tight windows that might get passed, you know, it might get deflected into an interception. But then plenty of other plays, it's going to lead to a crazy-looking play, a big gain, you know, touchdowns. It's going to move the chains on 3rd and 15. So he had a lot of those plays in that Texans and Packers game where he faced immediate pressure of roll out to his left or to his right, or even, you know, step up and away from exterior pressure, then come into – you know, interior pressure. There was a couple times where while he was facing the interior pressure, you'd see his left hand come off the ball. He would swat a hand down and still keep his eyes downfield and chuck a ball between two defenders like he did in that Texans game. Robbie Anderson was on the sideline where he floated it right over, I believe, the corner's head who was in a curl to flat. So he's going to have some interceptions. I completely agree with that. But with that, he's also going to make some just absolutely ridiculous plays. And this is him with guys, like I said, like Andre Roberts and Sherrone Peak. Now you're adding guys like Le'Veon Bell and Crowder. I'm definitely excited for this year. I think Jets fans should be excited. I err on more on the side like you were saying before with Jets fans that Jets fans are always going to hype up their own players, but I think there really is a reason to hype up Donald a lot. I think a lot of other fans from other teams see some of the interceptions that he had or just look at his stats and don't realize what he was working with in terms of the roster, the offensive coordinator, and like our guy Michael Nania found. With the Jets being in more 3rd and 10 and 4th and 10 situations that he had to throw more than any, you know, percentage-wise more than any NFL quarterback. So he's going to be in better situations this year, Le'Veon Bell, even if he's taking it from 3rd and 7 last year to 3rd and 3, just with his running ability alone, Darnold's going to be in a much better situation. And, you know, he's also playing a weaker schedule as well. So there's definitely reason for optimism. I think his ceiling this year, he could reach into that top 10 quarterback range and start showing a lot more consistencies.
This is the Overtime Podcast Network.
From a route tree perspective, after watching his first season and seeing what he did in college, what would you say are his two strongest routes to throw to and his two weakest routes to throw to? I think the sometimes somewhat inaccurate knock on him, at least coming out of the preseason and coming out of USC, was that he really wasn't good in the deep passing game. He was a guy who would thrive more in sort of that, you know, short to intermediate range. And for some reason, some people had some questions about his arm strength. I think he, for the most part, answered a lot of those questions well. I know, you know, he had a couple throws to the opposite hash mark in the Meadowlands where wind is always a factor, you know, in October where he looked completely fine. And he had his two best games late in the year outside playing against Houston and Green Bay. But You know, when you're looking at a route tree and looking at common throws he's going to have to make for Adam Gase or for any offensive coach he's ultimately going to play for, what would you say are his two bread and butter throws and then his two that are probably going to be his weakest going forward?
Yeah, bread and butter is really anything on the move, which I know is not a specific route, but any play action rollouts, naked bootlegs, any throws on a run, he definitely is going to exceed that because he's just such a natural thrower on the move. It could be fading backwards while throwing up your back foot, and he just has a natural arm talent to make those throws. I'm definitely going to say comebacks were really, really nice to Robbie Anderson. Any outbreaking route towards the sideline was really, really good from Donald. And like you said, with the struggles, there were some routes over the middle, especially earlier in the season. He started to hit them later in the season. But deep crossing routes, deep overs, there were some times where he was inaccurate, whether it be not leading a guy throwing it over his head. The Lions game, he missed Quincy Enunwa. I think the Lions game again, actually, he hit Enunwa, but it was a little bit behind him where Enunwa kind of had to adjust his body midair and Enunwa ended up dropping it. So, and there's more examples later in the season as well. So I would say deep crossing routes, deep overs. And then vertical routes, like you said, nine routes he definitely struggled on. And he made some really good throws. Like, you have the Broncos and even the Colts game. There was some nice deeper vertical routes that he threw that were good. But then there was also times where, Robbie Anderson in the Vikings game burned Xavier Rhodes. He missed them. There was a time where he burned Jalen Ramsey. And he actually threw the ball. I think it traveled 61 yards in the air, and he still overthrew Robbie Anderson. So he definitely struggled with his accuracy in terms of deep. There's also time in the Packers game where he rolls out to the right. Elijah McGuire is working against the linebacker. I'm not sure if it's a designed wheel or if he cut into the flat and then started cutting vertically as he saw Donald scrambling. I forget exactly, but instead of leading McGuire, into the end zone, which would have been it looked like an easy touchdown. He didn't put enough air on it. So when people are working deep down the field, he definitely has some touch issues. I'm not going to say it's accuracy because it's usually on the correct kind of angle that he wants it at. It's just it's either the timing or the power or the lack of power in one of those throws. So he definitely needs to work on the vertical routes, deep overs, and like I said, anything breaking towards the sideline, any throw on the move. He's going to exceed that. I'm expecting Gase to have a lot of play action rollouts for Darnold to make half field reads. He'd read both sides of the field, but if you get him on the move and give him a quick decision, because he is a quick mental processor for the most part. And yeah, there's still some plays that he struggled with. Like I said, he's 21 years old, but there were some plays where he reads coverages really, really quickly. Like let's just say on a smash concept, as soon as that cloud corner even just slightly moves up to that hitch, he's gonna hit the guy right behind him. On that corner route that they ran frequently last year. So he's a quick mental processor, so I'm expecting some quick reads on rollouts and things like that. So a lot of sail concepts. I know Gase runs as well, but yeah, those are some of the throws that are good, both good and bad.
This is the Overtime Podcast Network.
Shifting our focus over to Robbie Anderson, who's going to be basically the Jets' de facto number one receiver, most likely. I'm pretty bullish on him. I think compared to most people who've watched him play, he's always going to be a vertical receiver first and foremost. He's always going to be doing his best work outside the numbers. Most of the highlights you're going to see of him is him winning on a nine route and scoring a touchdown on it. That's where like 80% of his touchdowns have came throughout his 3-year career. I do think he's a guy that has a chance, or the most realistic chance, to be someone who finishes somewhere between 1,000 and 1,100 yards. I don't think he's going to get over that, even in the best-case scenario, because the Jets have a lot of other options they could revert targets to. But he's a guy, I think, who probably would have had a chance to hit 1,000 yards if Darnold played 16 games last year, or even the year before, if McCown played 16 games. He didn't get stuck with Petty for those few weeks. So I think with Anderson, he has improved over the past 2 years to an extent with his hand strength, basically winning on contested catches. He's never going to be a big yak guy, but from what he was as a rookie to what he is now, there's been some improvement. And I think generally he's gotten a little tougher after some early season struggles where he lost a couple fumbles, where he takes a hit. It's never going to be the strength of his game. His route tree is always probably going to be somewhat limited, But when you look at what you've seen from him through 3 years and what you saw from him last year, particularly in that last stretch with Darnold where he legitimately looked the part of a number one receiver, what do you think his ceiling is, and what do you think are some of the misconceptions about what his game is right now?
Yeah, and you said that well with the receiving yards. You know, it's always hard to predict stats. But with, you know, Crowder being in the offense and a new law and Le'Veon Bell and, you know, second year tight end Chris Herndon, you know, emerging or hopefully emerging, he's not going to get a lion's share of the targets just because there is a lot of, you know, there's a lot of talent around the offense. So he can't just get every single ball. But, yeah, he definitely improved last year. I think a common misconception about his game is that he's a really poor route runner minus vertical routes. There's actually some routes, and I just did the review on him, obviously, that's why you're asking me about it. But there's receivers, like, we watched that whole DK Metcalf thing. I remember the Seahawks, and he was running, like, a comeback, and he took, like, seven stop steps, and then he took more gather steps just to get out of his break, and it looked awful. Robinson's never going to be a guy like Julio Jones or Antonio Brown or Odell Beckham where he's running a comeback or any, you know, outbreaking route on a square cut where he's only going to take a stop step or two. Like, those guys can, but because he gets you to open your hips vertically really, really soon into his stem where you're going to get burned, he takes three or four stop steps, and, you know, he's not as sharp as his breaks or his gather steps. You'd like to see him get his hips out of his breaks faster. But he does it fast enough, you know, relative to how he gets guys to open their hips up. So it's not like he has to be super sharp on his cuts, because he affords himself room, like I said, because of his vertical speed. And listen, if you're not going to you know, play him short, or sorry, if you're not going to play him deep and you're not going to open your hips up, and you're saying, okay, you know, they're seeing for a couple plays in a row, okay, you know, they're biting on the comeback, they're biting on the curl, whatever it may be, because Robbie Anderson, you know, his strengths are routes along the sideline. You don't really want Robbie Anderson, like you said, because of his strength working across the middle, taking hits from safeties and linebackers. It's just not his game. But if you're going to start biting up on that comeback, Robbie Anderson's going to burn you deep. He's a hard receiver to guard against, you know, because like I said, you either open your hips up, he's going to beat you underneath, or if you don't open your hips up, he's going to, you know, burn you vertically. And I don't know if I just said that right, but you get what I'm saying. So people say, okay, well, press Robbie Anderson. Pressing Robbie Anderson, if that works 9 out of 10 times, you know, good for you. But that 10th time, if he beats your hands, then he's going to burn you. There's very few corners in this league who can keep up with Robbie Anderson. And I think he had a legitimate chance to win that whole 40-yard dash thing, which I didn't really love because that's exactly how you pull hamstrings. But he is a decent route runner, but paired with that speed, it almost makes him look good at times. And he learns some nuances in his route running, you know, chasing the near hip, chasing blind spots that he didn't do earlier in his career, stutter steps that made guys hesitate or freeze their hips for just a second to beat them vertically. He's good at catching balls over his shoulder, contested catches, and working back to the ball. He definitely struggles at times. Where the Patriots game, we saw the right sideline. He got a ball deflected for, I believe it was third down, and whatever corner it was, you know, swatted the ball out of his hands. We also saw late in the Texans game where Darnold threw the ball along the left sideline. Ball was a little bit high, but it hit Robbie Anderson in both of his hands, and because of some contact in his back and, you know, on his shoulder, he dropped that ball. So he's never going to be a strong contested catcher. But it definitely did improve in terms of over the shoulder. He's a decent route runner. But like I said, paired that speed, that's good. And I'm bullish on him too, Joe, where people, you know, earlier in the offseason were like, okay, you know, trade Robbie Anderson for a second, third round pick. I don't want to trade Robbie Anderson for a second, third round pick. I think he's become a part of this Jets culture. I think he's maturing a little bit. And I think he'd be hard pressed to find a, you know, five or so better vertical threats in the game. I think he's definitely one of the best deep threats in the NFL. And we all know how much that opens up an NFL offense. So I like to see him resign. I think he's the most important piece of this passing, you know, offense as of right now. If you had to, you know, tell me him or Crowder, I'm taking him. If you had to tell me him or Nunwa, I'm taking him. So I'm definitely, you know, very high on Robbie Anderson. I agree with you that the last 2 years we had him working with, you know, a rookie in Darnold who missed a few games, and then Josh McCown the year before. I think he'd easily have been a 1,000-yard receiver with a better, you know, offensive play caller and a better, you know, quarterback, to be frank.
This is the Overtime Podcast Network.
Staying on the offensive side of the football, let's talk about Jonathan Harrison, a guy who is probably generally considered the biggest question mark right now in the starting lineup. Maybe also along with Brian Winters, if you dug a little deeper. Harrison's, as it stands now, will be the starting center. I suppose it's still not out of the question. The Jets could look to make a veteran addition, but it's going to be tough to sign somebody who's going to be of a starting caliber at this point. And the trade market for starting centers is going to be a tough one to attack unless you're willing to give up a high draft pick or another position where Jets don't have enough roster flexibility right now, I think, to pull that off. So I think the expectation should be that Harrison's going to be a starter. He has not started 16 games anytime recently. You know, he played a decent amount last year. 2 years ago, he played only like 10% of the snaps. The year before that, he played a little more, but has not really been a full 16-game starter anytime recently at all. Now, the Jets have been bad at center the past few years since Mangold left. You had Wesley Johnson, who struggled. Then we had the Spencer Long experience last year. Harrison has basically sort of been the swing backup who has, you know, popped in and I think held his own fine as, you know, sort of just sixth or seventh offensive lineman. What are your thoughts on what they're going to get out of him by going into the year and saying this is going to be our 16-game starter at center and not our top backup on the offensive line? And that, you know, really the Jets' top backup on the offensive line right now, I guess, is, you know, Tom Compton or Chuma Adoga if you're looking at tackle. You know, both probably pretty concerning if those guys have to play. So it's not like there's some savior off the bench who's going to come in. How do you feel after watching a little more of Harrison's game?
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons that I guess the rift between McCagden and Gase is one of the first things that kind of set it off, apparently, was the fact that they didn't get a center. It was something that Jets fans went into the offseason looking at and wanted to be addressed. Because it was one of the biggest positions of need, along with quarterback and or cornerback, and along with some other positions that the Jets did address. But do you ever really want John Harrison going into a season? No, you want a guy like Kelsey from the Eagles, but that's obviously not what the Jets are afforded right now. After watching his film, and there are some guys I'm down on, you can talk about a guy like Brandon Schell, who after watching his film, I think he has a lot to correct, or he's not going to be on the Jets next year because his technique is absolutely awful. So I'm actually a lot more down on Schell right now. But after watching Jonathan Harrison, I'm a little bit higher on him just because he showed flashes. Now, he did have inconsistencies where he wouldn't take proper depth to pick up stunts, or you know, his footwork would be inconsistent, his hand placement would be inconsistent. He would take improper angles working up to the second level like he did against the Bills when he's working up against a Mike linebacker, took an aggressive angle. Tremaine Edmonds was able to, you know, scrape over top of him and make the tackle where he could have just took a consistent angle or a good angle and easily got in front of him. So there were some plays where it was some brain farts, but I'm hoping with a guy like Frank Pollock, who is widely considered one of the, you know, top offensive line coaches in the NFL coming from the Bengals last year, that he could, you know, string more consistency into Harrison's game, because it's not like he's not athletic enough or strong enough. We've seen some pictures of the dude's biceps. He's absolutely yoked up. And he has some good athleticism, so he has the necessary traits that he needs to, and aggression that he needs to. There's plenty of plays where, you know, he would just drive a guy into the ground and wouldn't stop driving until the whistle blew. So I don't have questions about that type of thing, but it's all about consistency, leverage, hand placement, taking the proper depth, knowing when to jump set a guy or root or foot fire, or, you know, get into your kick slide as a center. So there's definitely some positive signs from him. You just have to hope the consistency is strung more together. I'm a little bit higher on him than I was, you know, prior to watching the film. I think somebody, you know, tweeted at us the other day, Joe, where they're like, oh, well, you know, how do you feel about him? You know, better, bad, terrible. I was like, you know, I'm more happy, but still concerned at the same time. You know, it's not like I want him as a starting center, but definitely higher on him than I am like guys like Wesley Johnson and Spencer Long, which is just a shock. You know, growing up watching guys like Maui and Mangold, now going to those last two guys are just an absolute you know, change up. So I think Harrison could be a decent stopgap. I am concerned with the lack of depth behind him, because he has a guy in Compton who I'm not 100% sure he's ever played center. I think he's only been you know, left guard, right guard. Maybe he did play a few snaps, but I know he's not looked at as a true backup center. And then Chuma Adoga is not going to be moved inside anywhere. He's a tackle. He's not a guard. He's definitely not a center. So I'm concerned about the depth behind him. But like I said, I'm a little bit higher on him, but still not happy that he is, you know, going to the season as a starting center. And I think that's, you know, a good thing that Joe Douglas is going to do. Obviously, he's been focused on offensive line. at his previous stops, and that's what you heard he's really good at developing. So I'm expecting to go into next year with a good 2 to 3 new starters, and it's going to take years to rebuild that offensive line. It's not that easy. It's a very important position I think Joe Douglas is going to address, but it's still going to be a struggle for the Jets this year no matter what.
Yeah, I think that, along with cornerback, but really offensive line, is the main thing that holds me back from saying this team is going to be a playoff team this year, or saying this team is definitely going to be over 500, because it's not just one thing. It's not just like, well, if the Jets, you know, were better at center, they'd definitely be a playoff team. It's the combination of potentially being below average at center, as you mentioned, potentially being below average at right tackle, and I think Brandon Schell is someone who had like a good 3-game stretch to start his career, and then everyone just decided that he was like a great right tackle, and like he's really not, and he's been banged up, and like you said, has struggled, and is already kind of like up there in age for someone who's only been in the league for like 3 years. And then Brian Winters, I think, is generally a below average starter. You know, outside of that, you know, you're excited about Osemele. I think Beecham is fine for the value they have him on and what he does, but 3 question marks. It's unlikely that you're going to get a positive answer on all 3 of those. 1 or 2 of them are going to struggle or potentially get hurt. And that early part of the year when you play Dallas's defensive line, Philly's defensive line, even Buffalo's defensive line, and then Cleveland's defensive line with what they, you know, have added to support Myles Garrett, that's what terrifies me because, you know, Darnold, you can only do so much if he doesn't have time to throw the football. So as much as I am worried about cornerback, if you could get after the quarterback, you could manipulate and work around that to an extent, and you need to be playing an opposing quarterback who could really take advantage of it. If your offensive line can't block, everything, you know, goes to shit. I mean, it, you know, excuse my French, but you can't do anything on offense if you cannot block. I mean, is that still ultimately your major concern when thinking about this offense as a whole?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And you're talking about guys and Brandon Schell and Beecham who, you know, are still question marks to me. And if, even if they do have a positive season, that's in pass blocking. That's not in run blocking. And your biggest acquisition of the offseason, Le'Veon Bell, you know, ran behind a really good offensive line with the Steelers. And the Steelers, you know, obviously they helped him out a lot. I still think he's going to be a good running back no matter what, but still you want to have Bell behind a good offensive line. You want to have Sam Darnold behind a good offensive line, pass blocking, where last year you heard a lot. Well, yeah, the Jets were average in pass blocking. I don't know how they figured out those numbers, if it's by hits or pressures or what they consider hits and pressures, but those last 4 games, where people, I remember, you know, one of the biggest, you know, kind of arguments for Harrison was, oh, well, you know, Sam Darnold played his best 4 games, and Harrison was a center, like he actually had anything to do with Harrison, and not just Sam Darnold was absolutely balling out. So, yeah, the offensive line is for sure the biggest concern, like I said, with the two tackles. They can't run block at all. Beecham, I think, is below average. He's a decent pass blocker, but he's not a good run blocker. He doesn't have the physicality, the size, the length to be able to do it. Schell is extremely inconsistent, and like you said, Joe, that's what happens, especially at positions people don't really understand. Like receivers, you know, easier once it's highlighted all the time, or corners or linebackers, whatever. But how many people really know about the offensive line, what makes a good offensive line, and what good technique is, what certain run plays, what they're supposed to do? You know, it's not a thing that casual fans really understand. It's the most complex position in the game, and to understand, at least in my opinion. So if people see 1 or 2 good plays, and they're automatically assuming that you know, he's a good player. Just like Carpenter, that happened a couple of years ago. Just like with Trenton Cannon, who made a play or two late in the season as a gunner, and now he's a gunner that the team that Brant Boyer needs because he made a few tackles because those were highlighted. You know, so is he actually a good gunner? I don't really know. I don't watch a film on gunners. That would be absolutely ridiculous. But yeah, the offensive line is a concern, both in the run game and the pass game. Listen, if you have to get rid of the ball so quickly, there's obviously concepts that take more time to develop, whether it be, you know, Yankee, Mills, Crease, Sale, whatever it may be, that take, you know, a 5 to 7 step drop, or, you know, but if you can't do that because you're getting consistent pressure off the edge or from the interior, you have to now limit your offense to more shorter and intermediate type concepts, which limits the offense, and it limits what they can do with Robbie Anderson, with Jamison Crowder, who's a very versatile guy. He could beat you short, he could beat you deep. Anunua, who is an all-around type guy too. He's really an army knife, where he has a lot of kind of good traits, but nothing spectacular minus his yak. But yeah, it limits the offense. So The offensive line is definitely a huge concern with corner. Listen, you can sign a guy or two, and it's pretty much fixed, and you can sign a couple of lower-tier free agents to be backups, which I think they still need to do right now because, listen, I know the top two, three guys are bad, but if one of those guys goes down and you have guys like, you know, Derek Jones, who's another guy who made a play or two, and now he's going to be, you know, potentially a ball pro like some people think. You have guys like Jeremy Clark. I think Jeremy Clark's still on the team, but you have Derek Jones, guys like Jeremy Clark. He might have gotten cut. Brian Poole, who's inconsistent. You have Roberts, who should be a four-string guy. So that's a huge concern, but that's an easier fix than the offensive line, which, like I said, is going to be a 2-3 year probably rebuild of that offensive line because you have Beecham, who's getting older. You have Shell, who is on the last year of his contract. You have Osemele, who could be a Pro Bowler, you know, this year, but he's also getting a little bit up there in age. You have Harrison, who has never been starting. You have Winters, who is another guy, after watching his film, I'm a little bit higher on, but still below average, I think, is the proper category to put him in, but he's getting older, so there's a lot that has to be replaced on offensive line the next couple of years, so let's see what Joe Douglas got with that.
All right, Joe Blewett, thank you for joining us. As always, everyone, please make sure to follow his film breakdowns on the Turn on the Jets YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/TurnOnTheJetsTV. On the podcast, he's been working through on the Play Like a Jet feed and on TurnOnTheJets.com and on Twitter at JoeRB31. Joe, as always, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. I'm sure I'll talk to you either during the season or right before the season kicks off. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Thank you again, everybody, and we'll be back next week.